How does a gentle-spirited guy who likes to spend lots of time in nature decide to take up the topic of toxic masculinity? And I'm not just talking a little bit, but a lot. You're listening to Frau Amy's World, episode number 9. This podcast presents conversation with and for real-life creatives on how we find and keep walking our unique paths. I'm your host, Amy Hallberg. Welcome to my world. Today, I'm talking with my friend and fellow master coach, Ray DePaola, who, as I said, loves nature and is working with toxic masculinity. And full disclosure here, I'm not okay today. I've got a cold. You'll hear it. But I showed up anyway because that's our topic. I'm not okay. And that's okay. So, Ray, you have been talking lately about this idea of not being okay and being okay to talk about that openly. And I find that really interesting because what you do, I mean, I think of you as Gandalf, right? You're out there wandering in nature, finding magic. And yet the topic that you seem to have been exploring lately, at least one of them, is toxic masculinity. So how do those two things come together for you? How do you bridge those things?
Well, I think I wouldn't be able to do one without the other because, first of all, even the title or the heading, toxic masculinity, it feels so charged. I know a lot of men who rankle against that. You know, it just carries a charge. It feels harmful. It feels hurtful. And then a person responds by getting defensive. And I think when all of us get defensive, there's no growth, there's no expansion, and there's no connection with others. You know, we're building walls instead of bridges, right? Mm. So I don't think of it as toxic masculinity. You know, I think there's a humanity, and I think all of humanity has wounds, has damage, has a lot of scar tissue, and, you know, each of us has our shadows that we need to bring some light to and bring some healing to. That is where nature comes in. That is my place for healing. You know, I think of some of these social topics have daunted me in having conversation because of the emotional and energetic charge that they carry. People, they get hot, they get angry. You know, it was dangerous waters. So for me, the only way I can go there is by having some safe space where I can discharge that energy, where I feel so wholly and deeply connected and grounded. And for me, that's nature. You know, I go out and I can look at the vast sky and I see love there. And I see, you know, plants blooming, or, you know, we're in winter right now and I see, you know, a lake frozen or the trickle of a stream. And I feel connection and I feel good. And so that's where I rejuvenate and discharge a lot of that negative and get in touch with my positive emotions and my positive energy in order to go back and open up.
Well, and it sounds to me like you're actually moving towards the source of the anger. It's not that you aren't engaging with that anger. Is it okay to be angry? I mean, how do you see that?
What's the alternative? You know, if we feel angry and then we immediately tell ourselves that's wrong, that's not okay, well, we're shutting down and we're denying how we actually feel. When I look at how do we heal, I see when people are struggling or hurting, oftentimes one way they've been taught to deal with that is to identify all the parts of hurt, but sort of get stuck in that story. So, you know, they're looking back at sort of the landmines that they just navigated, and it brings them right up to the present, and they're still thinking about landmines and damage and fear and anger. And I mean, even when I'm talking about that, that just makes me want to curl up in a ball and hide.
So does this mean that we don't tell our stories? I mean, you know, I struggle with this, right? Because those stories are there. So how do you deal with that?
So I look at it as Instead of that, an alternative is if we start where we are and we look forward with the occasional glance into the rearview mirror. So not spending all our time in the old stories, but not denying them either. You know, I see, so instead of duality, I see a spectrum. I see that there's a range of things we go through, and too often duality sort of identifies one end point and the opposite end point. But I see that there's a vast land in between, in which there is a sweet zone where a balance zone. And even that isn't set. It isn't a fixed point, but that shifts moment to moment, you know, emotion to emotion, energy to energy, person to person. So how do we deal with it? How do we deal with our stories? If we can not be so charged by them, but look at them, share them, listen to others' stories, again, trying to be open and expansive, trying to gather willingly rather than feeling defensive, you know, and looking forward to that horizon, to where we want to go, to who we want to be, and allowing that to pull us forward rather than being anchored in the past and anchored in negativity. That's the shift. But it's not simply, so this whole notion of I'm not okay and that's okay, to me, what that means is not saying, you know, not being stuck with the I'm not okay and that's horrible and it will never change. And it's also not sort of just skipping out and saying, oh, I used to not be okay, but then I understood and now I'm okay.
You know, I think of that song, you know, Amazing Grace, I once was lost, but now I'm found, the end. And, you know, now I am a spiritual person and I am never, ever, it's the idea of either, you know, I am a sinner, I am always a sinner, or I am fine and now I am saved. Is there room for, it's a practice and it's always a practice. You and I met face to face for the first time at Martha Beck's house. And one of the high points for me was that Martha Beck, such an amazing woman. And she was like, I do this practice every single day. And you do it too. You're not saved. You're not condemned. You're a person who's walking the path. And I think there's some shame around the idea that you haven't arrived yet, you know?
Right. And I think because of that, or with that mindset, it makes sense that when we're identifying ourselves to others, it feels really scary. It feels really vulnerable to say, oh yeah, I am struggling with this thing. Because I think more and more our society identifies people either as damaged or as healed. Mm. And we don't spend a lot of time, you know, with the healing process and in, I mean, to me, that's the most respectful thing. That's the most honorable thing, is the person who's doing what they need to do in order to heal and not being stuck in the damaged and victimhood, but not also not rushing to want to claim I'm all better. You know, I am found, saying like, hey, you know what? I have tough days, or some moments, the things that I've been primed to do, which I know aren't good for me, sometimes they're alluring. Sometimes they feel easier than doing the thing I would prefer I do. And it's through that practice, but it's also through knowing others see you and hear you and understand and are doing that as well. And I think we all are doing it, right? We right. all have stuff we struggle with, and right. we all are doing our best to get out of that and get to a better place. But then when we talk to each other, it's like either, oh, I'm so screwed up, or no, I'm so together, it would just blow your mind. And it's like, come on. You know, all of us are in between those things, I think.
So you've been convening men's groups. I have not been privy to those because I'm not male. You and I have talked about there's a lot of convergence in the work we do. And I think we do ourselves a disservice to frame it so narrowly as this is a men's issue. This is a creative's issue. I mean, like, we all have our own access point to it, but we frame it very narrowly. What has surprised you the most in these men groups as you've been meeting with these guys?
One of the things that surprises me a bit is how loyal and entrenched some guys are in wanting, you know, the behaviors and the mindset, the beliefs that we've been taught. So this is my opinion, but that it feels really shaky, really vulnerable to consider that those might be unhealthy and harmful to others because of how long we or they have been serving those behaviors.
Right. Is it okay? Is it okay to admit that I fucked up? Because what does that say about me as a person?
Right. Right. What does it say about me as a person? What, you know, and we're also a society where we would rather punish people than help people heal, mm-hmm. you know, not retribution. And so, you know, that's an honest concern is if I say, you know, I regret these things, how am I, you know, I can't dare say that because it could completely destroy the life that I have. Right. And I struggle with that too. It's like, what do I tell a guy who's struggling with that and has done things that they've regretted? In AA, you have to make amends. I mean, that's part of the 12 steps, making amends for the wrongs that you've done. And that's a tough ask.
You know, for me too, That's funny. There are things that in my growth process I've gone through where I've made a mess of things or whatever, and I want to make amends. And sometimes I wanted making amends to mean you have to accept me now. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that no, a person who has a bad history with me gets to walk on. It doesn't mean I'm unredeemable. It doesn't mean that person even necessarily views me as unredeemable. It doesn't. I don't know what it means. It means that person needs to walk their path away from me. And so I think it's also the grace to understand that that was a learning experience. That was a beautiful learning experience. Thank you. And I'm going to go over here and do better over here. But I might not be able to redeem something that didn't go so well, that through my actions didn't work out. That's a really hard bit to swallow. At least for me, that's been hard. And that's been one of my biggest lessons, is to be so grateful for those things where I didn't do my best and let that be enough.
You know, I always think, because you're right, you know, we can go and work on amends, work on apology, work on recognizing our transgressions, things that we regret. And yet it doesn't mean that the person is going to say, I accept your apology, or I understand, or you are forgiven. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to, but the healing for a person, for a guy in this case, can't happen unless he looks at that, unless he faces it. You know, I believe with any of the wounds, and I think we all have stuff, right? We all have stuff from the way we were raised, from interactions we've had in past relationships with perhaps coworkers or experiences in our lives. And they have caused damage or regret. We wish we did things or said things differently, responded differently. Well, if we just refuse to look at any of those things, then we are most likely to repeat them and then have more regrets. The idea of shame, though, you know, I think about that because, you know, so often shame is considered not helpful. You know, it can hold us back. And yet, so I'm a guy who drank and identified, you know, finally at a point in my life that my relationship with alcohol was not helping me and that I struggled with it. And I felt a lot of shame around that dysfunction. And I could have just stopped with, you know, well, I don't want to feel shame. Well, I needed to fix for me what was my problem. And shame was folded into that. So I had to accept shame, and I had to be willing to look at that as part of the whole. And even now, you know, 6.5 years sober, I look back and I still have shame over things that, you know, over behaviors, over the fact that I used alcohol the way I did. Shame's just part of the equation and part of the journey for me. So I can't do what I wanted to do without the shame. It's just there. And I think, and it's that kind of thing, like, hey, you know what? In all of the healing that we want to do, there's, you know, we always start from a place of dysfunction or not well. Like, I'm not fine. I'm not okay. Mm-hmm. We can't heal unless we're willing to not be okay and to accept that for the here and now. So for me, there was some shame in that, and that's okay.
Well, one of the things you've talked about, and if the people who are listening to this could see right now, I'm looking at my screen and there's Ray, the nature guy, and I literally cannot see his face because the sun, it's like he's this giant angel. Like the sun is like he's divine. just plays into, you are Gandalf for me, Ray. You talked about TV and how, you know, it wraps it up all neatly in 30 minutes or less, and then it's done. And I love how you've gone out into nature and used nature as a way to find other stories that have been more helpful for you. So I wonder if you might share one of your nature stories of something that was bugging at you, or a time when you were feeling, you know, angry, ashamed, whatever, something, discomfort with something, and you went out and nature helped you to find some release and some resolution that felt truer.
You know, so I mean, every day.
Right, but pick one.
Yeah. No, you know, so you know, I can remember, so for Master Coach training we had to do live programming, so a Facebook Live or some sort of live event.
Oh, and, so scary too.
It so vulnerable. It felt so scary, it felt so vulnerable. And, you know, delightedly, because I always go back to, you know, I put myself in Master Coach training because I needed to flex those muscles, like exactly that vulnerability muscle I needed to strengthen. You know, vulnerability is simply mindset, because I don't think we are ever really vulnerable, but we feel vulnerable because we're telling ourselves that this, at this point, you know, something bad could happen, but whether it does or doesn't, like, we're still okay. Anyway, so having to do the live and doing it poorly, which I, again, you know, for me, I really dug into embracing my journey and it being a process and accepting not being okay at this moment with the intention of practicing to get better and to get to a place where hopefully I do feel better and okay. But I did my live for Master Coach training and it, you know, I felt it sucked. Thank you. The lighting and everything, I was in the shadows. It was in, and it's just, and the energy was so low. And I look at, you know, I don't look at it now, but when I looked at
these all the time now, and they're beautifully filmed, right? Yeah. So I mean, it was a learning experience, and you've gone, as long as we're talking from spectrums, you've gone from one end of the extreme to the other, where you're out in nature and it's beautifully filmed. So you learned a few things anyway.
Right. Well, that was, no. That, but in wanting to, and feeling the call, like, this is something I desire to get better at. Mm-hmm. So I went out into nature and wound up by a river and just felt a real, more of a connection and comfort in being by the river. I felt like so much stronger and at home there that I felt like, okay, this is the place where I should do this. And to get a little bit woo-woo, I had also connected with my future self, had been connecting with him for a while, having conversations. And so to me, the funny, interesting thing is that there came a point. So, you know, still being in my head and doing the, you know, the infernal editing all the time, I would start and I'd be like, oh no, that was horrible. And I turn it off and start and turn it off because I was recording. I wasn't doing a live because I wasn't ready for that yet.
Right.
And time after time, finally, I just said to my future self, who I know as Dharma, because he's told me that. And I just said, look, you know what? I thought I was ready to do this thing. And I feel like I'm in a place where I can do this thing, but I'm not ready to do this thing. So I need you to do it.
I love it. You call in your future self. Could you get this done for me, please?
You know, because one of the great things, you know, we're sitting there and we're having this conversation and he's saying, you know, we're going to do hundreds of these. We're going to do a bunch. And honestly, some are going to be even worse than these, but it's so important that you do the first one. Like this is so critical. You do the first one and then we're going to continue. And I can tell you, because I've done these, it'll be great. You know, it'll become easier. So, but I was like, and I'm not ready. And I just surrendered and said, you know, I'll watch. I'm opening up to you and you speak. And that worked. And I don't think I would have had that if I wasn't there out in nature by the river, feeling such a grounded connectedness.
So you just brought up something that, that I think is so important. We don't talk about this. How do we get past we overthink things? And for me, this was a big thing too. In my head is telling me all this stuff. And you and I have come from a tradition where we've now been really nurtured in this idea of you have to connect to your heart. You have to connect on a spiritual level. And that's part of the journey. And it's not just we do it all by ourselves alone. There's a level of courage where you have to show up. You don't just get to excuse yourself away from it, but it's also you have to show up for that guidance, for that support. You can't just be the savior of all the other people. You receive that sustenance that helps you, that gives you the guidance so that you don't have to be in control of everything. And I wonder how much our society insists that we man up, how much that keeps us from making true spiritual connection. I call it spiritual bypass. You've said that some people have resistance to that term, but do you want to talk to that at all?
Sure. Yeah. Spiritual bypass. I mean, I think in that realm, it is spiritual bypass when if we're avoiding connecting to our heart and to the divine, doing the work of learning to connect and building a relationship, if we're not doing that, but we would just want to jump to like, oh yeah, I meditate, you know, 15 minutes a day. Oh, why do you meditate? So I become better at meditating. I don't know. You know, that's not the point. You know, we don't meditate to become better meditators. I mean,
I don't meditate. It doesn't work for me actually.
But you know, like, you know, but any of the things that we do, and if we're doing them just so that we can call ourselves better, I think we're missing out. And there absolutely is a spiritual component of that, I think our lives are richer when we connect and understand that there's a spiritual component to all the things we do. You know, you do the dishes, and if you can connect with the divine and gratitude, it can be so profound. But if we just, you know, rush to wanting to show ourselves or describe ourselves to others as better, you know, oh, I'm better now. I'm fine now. Mm-hmm. That's where I think there can be the bypass. And it's so you were talking, you know, yeah, we come from a learning tradition now where connecting with spirit, connecting to our hearts, listening to our bodies, those are our navigating tools. And I can't imagine doing it any other way. But yeah, I mean, there are times when my head jumps in and thinks, okay, like to navigate today, this is my to-do list and dot, dot, dot. You know, I need to knock these things off the list. Mm-hmm. And totally disconnect from what would, you know, one of the questions I try to go to continually is, what does my heart want me to do?
Right.
What does my heart want me to do next?
Right.
From such a different, or it's such a different orientation than what is the plan? What does my head think the plan should be? But yeah, I think, you know, that notion. So we do get, I think we get lost. We are taught, you know, we go to school and we're taught there's a framework and, you know, we're supposed to check these boxes to get where we're going. So this notion of stopping and making space, you know, I mean, that's a whole other issue, is we fill up our lives with busyness. You know, we feel better and we are more recognized when we're busy than when we're not busy. And yet, you know, I think now that I've slowed down and I'm not perfect at it. I that's one of the things, like I always tell my clients, like I'm not standing at the end waving a flag saying, here's where you want to be. I'm just like, I'm just a couple of minutes ahead of you with notions of how to navigate this next stretch and asking you the most powerful, profound questions I can to help you understand the terrain and where you want to go.
And I would love to interject here that you ask these questions to yourself. And in fact, you have a second to-do list, which is one question that you write on your hand every day, or you like there's one thing on your hand, so that as you have this other to-do list, you force yourself to pay attention. You stage yourself with the question.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's my thought of the day, and it's that exact kind of thing where it was really easy. You know, I would meditate and have a mantra and, you know, and the idea is, oh, it's this centering thought of the day. And then I'd go through my day and crap would happen or life would happen. And there would be times even when I would be like, oh, what was the thought? And I would have no clue. I was so disconnected and had lost it. And I thought, what is the most bold action, like, you know, sort of rebel action I could take? And the first thought was, I could write it on my hand. And I thought, well, come on, I can't do that. Like, that's not that's not socially acceptable. And that little voice, right, that little guiding voice said, try it. And so much of what I've been doing has been that little thing of like, when a thought says you can't do something.
Oh, that's your hot track.
But I can't find any real evidence,
right,
that I can't. There's that little voice that says, try it, experiment. So yeah, when I, you know, and the best thing about that has been, as I go through my day, not only is it there for me, but it, you know, at times sparks real conversation with others who embrace it, or sometimes they just don't get it, but all of a sudden there's a conversation, and that's really cool too.
And it's not even your business to know how that lands for them, because you may plant it here. It's like tossing a little pebble into the pond. You don't know how that's going to ripple out, right?
Right.
That
right.
One little thing on your hand. So I really want to thank you for talking with me today. And I would love to just ask you one final question.
Okay.
In these situations with men, in these groups, has there been a moment ever where your mind was going, oh, God, no, I don't even know how this is going to turn out. This is not going to. And you surrendered it and you saw the hand of the divine in what happened. Is there a story you could tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think in every case, there is this moment of pause, hesitation, where I think, how can I dare to do this? And the richest experiences have been when I've dared to, and sort of, you know, consequences be damned, really embracing the whole, you know, because yeah, when I've stopped myself because of what I think might happen, it's such an unknown. And so a big part of my life is embracing the unknown rather than, you know, running away from it. And yeah, you know, going there and also accepting that sometimes it does get pretty rocky or heated, ugly. And then, you know, doing my best to diffuse and to calm people down. But daring to go there, there have been times when there is profound openness from another that I haven't expected at all. You know, talking about, you know, even using the term toxic masculinity and seeing guys get pissed off, feeling like, you know, they're being unfairly labeled. But then as we talk about it, you know, underneath that is their desire to be seen and heard and to feel safe about sharing. And the real reason they're angry is because they feel like that term sets the stage against that openness. So all of a sudden when I hear that, I think, dude, we're talking the same language. We're talking about the same thing. So that's why I don't use toxic masculinity anymore, because I don't want them to feel alienated. You know, the thing that I think about, and it really resonates, are just four words: be kind to all.
And that includes yourself.
Yeah, exactly. We so often forget that, right? But when I was given those four words, and I remind myself of that, be kind to all, I think that's about as healing as it gets, is just kindness.
Be kind to all.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
Thanks for visiting Frau Amy's World. Today's episode featured Ray DePaola. If you enjoyed yourself, please subscribe to this podcast below, where you can also find links for both Ray and me. Offer a comment so people can find us, and share with your friends. Please and thank you for your support of my work. You can learn more about me at CourageousWordsmith.com. I'm Amy Hallberg, and until we meet again, travel safely.